We're back. It's been since March.
I think our last recording was in April.
And now, due to the pleadings of our millions of fans, we have returned with a new and even better, more exciting genre.
I'm super concerned that you're saying things like that because that's going to really raise expectations.
It's good to set the bar high. We want to thank you for your patience. It's been a little while since we've been back. I know the hundreds and thousands of emails that we've got that have missed us. We just want to say thank you for your concern. We are here and excited to start. Everything I've just shared with you is predominantly fiction, however. With the exception, we haven't been here since March.
April. I'm pretty sure it's April.
I've got Corona brain, so it's hard for me to figure it out.
Yeah, well, we're going to keep this episode corona-free.
So we're masked up for this bad boy.
Politics-free and all that good stuff, because who wants to hear about that anymore?
Yeah, plus we don't really charge for it, so it's always free.
So, first, I think that we should do a little bit of housekeeping talk.
I flushed. Oh, not that housekeeping. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's funny because you sound really scripted, even though there's literally no script.
No, there's no script. Only the script that runs through my brain.
Which is scary.
For the general public, it is.
I feel like I all of a sudden count as the general public.
If we've not been here since March and this is our script.
April.
Wow. April, okay.
So, yeah, we haven't been here in a super long time. We haven't done anything in a super long time. I've been blowing your social media up with stupid memes and funeral puns and jokes and facts and fun stuff. And we got a new logo and we made a website. It's marriageisascream.com. And we have a Patreon.
It was crazy that wasn't already taken. I can't believe that was available.
I know.
I mean, you just thought everybody wanted to have the website marriageisascream.com.
Absolutely.
Because there's tons of screamers out there. I know there is.
That's actually the name of our first tier in our Patreon.
The Screamers. Yeah.
I think we have like a total of.
That double entendre is meant and not scripted.
I think that there's 7 tiers, and we just got stickers in the mail.
So it's like Dante's Inferno. There's 7 levels.
Maybe someday there will be more.
Let's stick with 7, because the 7th level is the best level. Reserved for the extra special.
So if you guys are interested in our stickers or our super fun envelopes, which I didn't tell you, but...
Oh, you got envelopes?
I got black envelopes with a stamp sealing kit to go with it.
Oh, so it's like the wax sealing kit? Mm-hmm. That kind of makes it look kind of cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of black envelopes, just a real side note. Back a long time ago, and this is because I'm old, some of our listeners won't know what this is. There was a device called a thermal fax machine. Mm-hmm. And every now and then, just to play a joke on other people in my organization or people that we didn't like, we would fax them a piece of black paper. Now, what you don't realize, or many people don't realize, is it would legitimately tie up that thermal fax machine for 10 minutes, just printing off a sheet of black paper and chewing up their toner. I know, to most of you, that's not funny.
Level to me, 1 million petty.
It was funny.
That's probably literally the most petty thing I've ever heard.
I also used to write on my cover letter, please fax back, this is my only copy. And I can't tell you how many people would send it back. Oh my God. Because they just didn't get it.
You did that to people?
Yeah, I'd write on my cover sheet on fax cover, always had a cover letter, and I'd put on there, please fax back, this is my only copy. And many people would send it back, and not understanding that it's not my real piece of paper that came to you. I still have it. It's a facsimile that you have. I took advantage of many people that way.
You're a mean person.
I am a mean person.
Well, now that all of our listeners know that you're a mean person as well. So yeah, we have a Patreon now.
Yes. So that's
fun stuff.
Our first Patreon.
What do you mean our first Patreon?
Oh, I thought we have... You're talking about our first person on Patreon.
Yeah, that's called a patron.
We have one of those, too.
Yeah, Jessica.
Nice. Yergi
from the Misery Machine.
I'm a fan. Misery loves company. I like that.
So, yeah, fun stuff. On the website, actually, I'm going to start posting show notes. And we also have a gallery now. Nice. And, like, listeners, people can follow along with the podcast episode through pictures in the gallery.
And you said you're going to work on getting us a YouTube presence.
So, yeah, I'm thinking of converting our podcast episodes to YouTube videos. So I guess the main purpose of that is so that people who are hearing impaired can
listen. Read the text.
Well, yeah, not listen, but read the podcast, I guess. And I guess, yeah, I am working on that a little bit. Lots of fun new stuff. We're like building the Instagram up and the Twitter. And for patrons, we have a private Facebook group.
Ooh.
Yeah, not private, not like wink, wink private, just regular private.
Regular private.
Yeah, so you have to like be granted access to the group.
Nice. Can I get in a group?
Well, you're supposed to be part of the group, but you don't have Facebook.
Yes, I'm in. No, I don't Facebook. So. No.
It's unfortunate.
Eh. The world is probably better without me Facebooking.
I don't know.
Eh.
It's okay.
I have to cut the grass.
Yeah, Michael does a lot of yard work these days.
I like to get out there because you think my tractor's sexy.
I'm so sorry, guys. So sorry. I think Michael thinks his tractor is sexier than anybody else does.
Oh, no. No, it gets letters.
From who?
The repair bills.
Oh, yeah, it does. Good thing you got that insurance.
That's right.
Okay, so the episode I've been talking about for like a month now, we're going to be talking about funeral practices.
Which is ultimately kind of cool. I'm looking forward to this. I have a nephew who is a mortician. And so this is definitely kind of cool. We'll have to shoot him a note, tell him to listen to this podcast. He might be one of our million listeners now. I'm just not sure. I can't keep up.
Please stop. Please stop saying words. We don't have a million listeners. One day I hope that we have a million listeners. But as of right now, that's not in the cards. We're working on it. Okay. So I guess we're just going to do a brief roll through the history of funeral practices. And then we're going to go into weird funeral practices. Or I guess, you know, what would be considered weird to people in North America.
Yeah.
Or in Europe. Things like that. And then we're going to also talk about alternatives to traditional burials and cremations and things like that. And then I have some fun facts.
I'm not sure how we tie fun facts.
I'm about to put the fun in funeral.
Okay. It's a funeral.
Yeah. So funeral traditions are pretty much as old as humans are. Many human cultures have been studied, and each one has three commonalities for death and the disposition of their dead. So number one, some type of ceremony, funeral rite or ritual. Number two, a sacred place specifically for the dead. And number three, memorials for the dead. There's this place called Shanidar Cave. It's in Kurdistan, which is in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And it became an iconic spot in the 1950s when Ralph Selecki made the discovery of Neanderthal remains.
Oh.
So scientists unearthed the bones of at least 10 Neanderthal individuals, including men, women, and children. These individuals were thought to have died 70,000 years ago. So they were thought to have been deliberately buried there. This caused a lot of controversy because people did not want to believe that Neanderthals had the sophistication to do something like that.
So they were just pretty much saying these guys are too dumb to bury the people together?
Yeah.
Or to miss the people? See, that's a little bit rude. I mean, we've seen videos and stuff where animals recognize when a portion of their pack or tribe or whatever is passed on, and they're remorseful. And
yeah,
you know, so why wouldn't?
Well, remember, this is like the 1950s.
Neanderthal man.
So
I take offense to that. I have a large forehead.
That's true. You just have a large head in general.
That's true.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Michael hasn't had a haircut in probably like 6 months.
No, this is my COVID resistant cut. I have not cut my hair since I shut down the barbers. We will post a picture to the website for you.
I did post a picture already.
She did already. You are so lucky if you've seen it. My hair is magnificent.
Majestic.
It is.
It's a datacorn.
It could be climbed. It's so big.
So in 2016, they discovered a rib, a lumbar vertebrae, and a right hand that was still clenched after tens of thousands of years. So in 2018 and 2019, they extracted more bones, a skull, and beneath the skull was a left hand. They also found upper body bones down to the waist. So in the 1950s, after finding the remains of those 10, I want to call them people because they're people.
Oh, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, well, they don't call them people. They legit just call them bodies or Neanderthals. And I was like, yeah, well, they're people.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've worked with people I think are Neanderthals. So
Selecki argued for a long time that some individuals may have been killed by falling rocks in the cave, but others were buried there on purpose. So this conclusion came from findings of impressions from stems and flowers of aromatic plants such as mint and sage. This is the oldest example of putting flowers and fresh plants in the grave before burying the dead.
And how old was this one?
70,000 years old.
Okay.
They found one man known as Shanidar Z, who was buried with his head resting on his forearm, and he was surrounded by flowers and had animal antlers rested on his body. Which was like, the antlers thing was a very common practice.
Right.
The reason they're also saying it was a burial was because if it had just been abandoned there, then the body would have probably had bite marks within the bones.
Right.
In 24,000 BC, in 1822, William Buckley, a professor at Oxford, was working with an excavation team in South Wales when he stumbled upon an exciting discovery. It was a skeleton that was dyed red. She had a seashell necklace and was surrounded by grave goods. I guess that's what they call them. Grave goods.
Yeah, grave goods.
These items were thought to have been some kind of ritual significance. So bones, antlers, and ivory rods. They nicknamed the woman the Red Lady. They later discovered that the Red Lady was actually a red gentleman.
Oh, whoops.
They also discovered that he may have lived 26,000 years ago. So they're saying that this like dates back to 24,000 BC.
Okay.
This makes this the oldest ceremonial burial discovered in Western Europe. So 7,000 BC is where they find the earliest evidence of urns filled with ashes in China.
So this is urns with ashes. So that's a cremated.
Yeah.
Now, at 7,000, when were the pyramids? Were the pyramids way before that one?
I believe we're going to get into Egyptian stuff. 5,000 BC, the oldest known dolmen was built. So this is actually a really funny story. So I talked to you about dolmens earlier.
Yeah.
And I was explaining to Michael, so a dolmen is a megalithic tomb with a large flat stone laid on upright ones. And the best way I can describe them is the Stonehenge version of the pie symbol.
Yeah, two big rocks with a rock on top. It makes it look like pie because it hangs off on either side.
And I told Michael earlier of that visual.
Well, the way you said it.
Legit talking about pie.
When you said a pie symbol, you know, I'm always in charts and graphs. So I'm thinking of a pie chart, a wedge in a pie chart, right?
Yeah.
And so when you said that and you showed me the picture, I'm like, I don't know if I would use pie as a description.
This looks nothing like pie.
I like to eat pie. I'm familiar with pie, and I know pie charts.
It totally looks like pie.
It does totally look like pie.
Pie without the E.
Yeah. Right.
So 4,000 BC is where we're at now. So this is where they find the origination of embalming in Egypt.
So 4,000 BC, so 3,000 years later than 7,000 BC.
So this process is also known as mummification, which we're actually going to talk about this a little bit more later. They would remove all of the moisture from the body because the dried form of the body would not decay as easily.
So they salted the bodies to remove the moisture.
Yeah. It was important in their religion to preserve the body so that it remained as lifelike as possible. These practices were so successful that today we can look at a mummified body of an Egyptian and have a good idea of what they looked like 3,000 years ago when they were alive. So we'll talk about the actual mummification process later on. So now we're in 1000 BC. So urns that were originally made of clay can now be found made of many different materials. 800 BC, the ancient Greeks' preference becomes cremation on funeral pyres. So pyres are a bed or platform that can be carried to a ritual spot, and then they would be set on fire. Mm-hmm. 410 BC, catacombs stop being used for burials.
So, you know, speaking of catacombs, so 410 BC, they stop using. When is the oldest catacomb? Any idea? Because if they stopped in 410, so, you know, you see all these specials where the people go down, they dig around in the catacombs and they get lost or the flashlights quit working. And there's 14,700,000 bodies. Mm-hmm. I wonder how long that process went on. That might be a really neat side research because where is it? It's in Europe somewhere, England somewhere, that the catacombs exist. And there's supposed to be like endless tunnels just loaded with bodies.
Well, maybe we'll do a bonus episode just on the catacombs.
Yeah.
So in 353 BC, the first true mausoleum was built for the Carian ruler, I think it's Mausolus. So the building began before his death in 353 BC. Construction of the mausoleum was continued by his wife. It ranked as one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Hmm. So now we're in year seven.
Which is BCE, before Christ's execution. Or if it's year seven, it's AD after he was executed.
Okay. So Native Americans are known to bury their dead with grave goods. So that's normally tools and jewelry. There's actually, I'm actually going to post this on the website and probably in the within the show notes, that in 1990, they actually put a clause somewhere, and there's a law that says you are not allowed to, like, if you find remains of Native Americans, you're not allowed to keep them, and you're not supposed to, like, keep digging for them.
How would you know they're Native American, though? I mean,
Because they're buried with Native American tools and jewelry and stuff. So if I'm out here in the backyard
digging, and I come up with my tractor, and I turn up some bones, they could have been from, you know, the time frame when there's all those whiskey.
Well, naturally, if you find a body in your backyard, you're going to call somebody and let them know that
there's Ghostbusters.
A body. And why? It's a skeleton, not a ghost.
The ghost is somewhere.
Okay.
Why?
So any remains found belong to the descendant of that tribe. So legally, that's who they are supposed to go to. So in 400, there is this practice called sati or sati. It's a practice of a widow throwing herself onto her husband's funeral pyre after it has been set on fire. They call it committing sati, and now it's like outlawed. It was outlawed several times. I think most recently it was outlawed in the 80s. It still occurs and is still regarded by some Hindus as the ultimate form of womanly devotion and sacrifice.
I can remember a time going to quite a few funerals. I've been to quite a few funerals.
Sorry, we have a kitty at the door.
Well, we don't just have a kitty. Our
like seven
cat
kitties.
Had kittens, and so now they're everywhere. So
now there are kitties.
If you want a cat, send us an email. Anyway, so I've been to a lot of funerals. We'll UPS it. But
no, we won't. He's just kidding.
Yeah, we use FedEx.
It's a joke.
FedEx is better.
We're not sending cats
where
the mail.
They wouldn't even lower the body into the ground with people around because of that fact. Like, nope, body stays above until everybody's gone. Then the tenders did it all. So I wonder if that was some bleed over from that.
I don't know. This practice actually wasn't always voluntary. Sometimes a woman would be pressured into doing this or even forced to do it. Burning to death on the pyre is not the only form, though. It's the most common form, but some women were buried alive with their husbands' corpses. The term is derived from the goddess Sati, also known as, I think it's Dakshayani, who self-immolated because she was unable to bear her father Daksha's humiliation of her husband, Shiva, who was still alive, by the way.
Oh.
So now we're in 900. Viking funerals involve ritual sacrifice of peasants, alcohol, and tumulis. A tumulus is basically a nicely shaped mound burial site. So it looks like legit just a hill in like the middle of...
Random hill.
So in 1500, the earliest sign that this is the earliest sign that they can find of Aztecs celebrating the Day of the Dead. Hawaii inhabitants are known to bury their dead and then light a fire over the burial site that must stay lit for 10 days. In the 1800s, body snatching becomes a concern in the U.S. and the U.K. In the 1830s, the Chinese are burying people in the side of mountains. In the 1860s, embalming begins in the U.S. during the Civil War. In 1864, Arlington became a military cemetery site. In 1884, cremation becomes legal again in England. So I guess they were like, no, no, no. Well, because England was like heavily run by Catholics, and Catholics did not accept cremation as a form of burial at all. So in 1882, the first meeting of the NFDA occurred. So that's the National Funeral Directors Association. In 1887, Cincinnati College of Mortuary Science is established. In 1890, there are almost 10,000 funeral directors in the U.S.
Wow.
In 1909, Crane and Breed built the first motorized hearse. In 1919, Bring Back the Dead League is formed. This league basically fought for bringing back the American soldiers that died overseas and were in some cases buried there. So a lot of them were killed in France and then buried there. In 1930, open-air funeral pyres become illegal in the UK. 1963, the Catholic Church begins accepting cremation. In 1993, the first cemetery featuring green burial is open in the UK. So a green burial is basically just, there's lots of ways that they do green burials. I know that a pretty common thing to do is burying people above ground in these wicker caskets. And as the body decays inside and stuff, like the wicker casket also decays into the ground and just provides nutrients to the earth and stuff.
That's a pretty cool idea.
In 2000, echopods are made to be used in green cemeteries. In 2006, custom caskets begin to enter the market. In 2014, custom cremation urns begin being made with 3D printers, which is kind of cool. So that's like just a very brief history of where we are. There's a lot of strange funeral practices around the world. If you grew up like I did with a Catholic / Christian family, then you might have experienced a funeral or two in your lifetime with, you know, the typical wake and then a ceremony. And then you get into like a funeral procession and the final send off where they lower the casket into the ground. And sometimes people toss flowers onto the grave or dirt or other stuff, I guess. And then they fill the grave up with dirt and you have the stone and everything, the headstone. There are many, many other funeral traditions within different religions and around the world. We're just going to touch on a few of the stranger ones. So we're going to start in North America and talk about like how funerals went in the 1800s. So home funerals were a common practice in early America. So a home funeral is basically they do everything within their homes. The family takes care of the body and everything. They have the wake in the parlor in the home.
When you say the family takes care of the body, at this time, is there a mortician that comes? Does it be embalming or anything else like that? So
no. Remember, embalming doesn't start occurring until the 1830s, was it?
Well, you just said this is the 1800s.
1860s.
Okay, so this is...
So most of the 1800s, there's no... embalming is not even a thing.
Yeah, and even through a lot of it, there's probably not used a lot, so...
And this is until the 1800s, just by the way. So this is like 1700.
So we just have a body lying in state, decaying in the house. Okay.
So...
Them southern states were rough in the summer.
So a group of women in each community were responsible for the laying out of the dead. Visitation was held in the front parlor, which was followed by the procession to the church and then the cemetery. And in some cases, I believe they were just buried like that, like in a family grave site, mm-hmm. like a family cemetery, which normally was by the house. Mm-hmm. Until the 1800s, most families took care of their own dead family members. The parlor, now the living room in modern day homes, was filled with their finest furniture and decor. So it started being used for funerals. The body was displayed in a casket that was made or was sold at the general store. So you could like legit just go to freaking Walmart and buy a casket.
You buy a casket at Costco.
Can you really?
Yeah.
No way.
Yes.
Nuh-uh. Yes. You lie so hard. No. I don't believe you.
No, you could buy a casket at Costco.
Most upscale homes in the 19th century had what's called a death door or a false door. This door went from the formal room or the parlor right to the outside. It was considered improper to carry the dead out of a door that the living used as an entrance.
Oh.
So I'm assuming that you also weren't allowed to walk in through that door. So it was just an output.
It's exit only. There's only one way out that door. In a box.
So later, a grave was dug in the family cemetery. Post-mortem photography is probably one of my favorite creepy things. It was introduced shortly after the introduction of regular photography in 1839. In the early days of post-mortem photography, no one really posed the bodies or even cleaned them up. A poorer family may even just lay a nice dress across the body of a person who died in shabby clothes. Americans, unlike Europeans, would sometimes keep these pictures somewhere private. It was customary for Europeans to frame and display them.
Well, you see that with like a lot of the Old West publications where, you know, they're lined up in their caskets with mm-hmm. pictures taken of the outlaws.
Yeah. Well, that's a little bit different. These are like their family members and they're like literally outlaws. Gathering around them and taking a family picture.
Outlaws had families.
Well, this became like a practice because it was very uncommon to have your picture taken while you were alive because people didn't have money to do that.
And it steals your soul.
No. Well, that's not why they were doing it. But I do know that some people do believe that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it. And I know that in some homes, they would cover all of the mirrors after somebody died so that their soul couldn't become trapped inside of the mirror. They would just cover them with sheets and stuff. Europeans also took pictures of dead celebrities and sold them as cards.
Nice.
Yeah, classy. Towards the turn of the century, they started to try to make the deceased look like they were still alive. So they would position them in more natural living poses and dress them up and beautify the corpse a bit. They would like actually do their hair and stuff.
So it was the precursor to A Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah, sure. Like pre-precursor.
Pre-precursor. It's really got the idea.
As photography became cheaper and as death moved into the medical facility, these practices began to just die out. Once it became more common, no matter how much money you had, for people to have pictures taken during their life, it was less necessary to capture their image in death.
Makes sense.
So we're going to move on to a brief segment on mummification. Although embalming is still used, I couldn't find much supporting evidence that mummification is still used. Although I do know that if you want to be mummified, you can be, but it costs like a lot of money.
I wonder if they put your entrails in the clay jars like they did before. Yeah. Here's your liver. Here's your heart. Here's
okay. Your... That's enough from you.
Or they just fry it up and cook it.
So it's important to note that mummification was mostly done to wealthy people. Poor people just obviously couldn't afford to do it. So here is the process of mummification. So they would insert a hook through a hole near the nose and pull out part of the brain. They would make a cut on the left side of the body near the tummy, remove all internal organs, let the internal organs dry, place the lungs, intestines, stomach, and liver inside jars. They would place the heart back inside the body, rinse inside of the body with wine and spices, Cover the corpse with salt for 70 days. After 40 days, stuff the body with linen or sand to give it a more human shape. And after the 70 days, wrap the body from head to toe in bandages. And then they would place people in a sarcophagus. And if you were someone important, such as a pharaoh, you would be placed in a special burial chamber with lots of special treasures. So jewelry, gold.
You had to have stuff with you in the afterlife.
Pets. Their pets were also mummified and stuck in sarcophaguses and buried with them.
The poor cat. I didn't want to go. It's not my fault. Meow.
I believe. I don't want to say that because I don't know if that's completely true.
Well, cats were super popular pets back then.
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just something different. But I don't want to say that because I don't think that it's 100% accurate.
Is it secret?
No, it's not secret. But I think I remember reading about it, but I don't think it's true. I'll put it on
show notes.
In the show notes if it is true, and I'll just add it in there. But I'm not going to say it on here because I don't want to be quoted on misinformation. Okay, so now we're going to go to South Korea. So they have this tradition, and people are legit turned into beads.
Beads.
Yeah.
B-E-A-D-S.
Yeah. So they're not like, I think if you think of, I mean, I'll have pictures in the gallery of these beads, but they almost look like sand balls, like little balls of sand, you know, like.
Are they marbles? Are they glass? Or?
Well, here, I'll just tell you what they do. And then you can look up really fast what they look like if you want.
No, I'm good. I'll look at it in the gallery.
Rude. So in South Korea, a law was passed in 2000 saying that anyone buried after the year 2000 will have to be dug back up in 60 years because of limited space. Oh. So before this law was passed, 6 out of 10 South Koreans were being traditionally buried. But as of the year 2012, that number went from 6 to 3. The cremation rate soared, obviously. Instead of using an urn, they started turning the ashes into colorful death beads. They're kept and displayed in glass bowls and dishes in the homes of relatives. The process costs around $900 and can be done in several colors, including blue, green, so it's like this seafoam color, pink, or black. The first step is, of course, cremating the body and processing the cremains, which is what they call cremated remains, which I think is like a little bit funny.
The cremains.
So after cremation, crematory.
I think it's crematory.
Because you say cremation, so can you say crematory? Crematory?
I don't know. Crematory sounds like where I'd go for ice cream. Gross. Crematory.
Gross. I don't know. The crematory usually processes any remaining bone fragments that weren't broken down in the heat. They do this either by hand or by passing the fragments through a special machine that crushes them. This process creates a uniform pale gray to dark gray powder. The ashes are usually similar in appearance and texture to sand. Once the bead maker receives the ashes, they'll make sure the powder is of a perfect consistency to work with. They'll want to avoid having larger pieces that will make the beads appear inconsistent or imperfect. So the pictures you see are like of, they look to be about the size of like a not cooked ball of couscous.
Oh, okay. Not very big at all.
No. I think that they do make them a little bit bigger than that, but the pictures I've seen for South Korea don't, because I know that other cultures make these death beads, but these ones look like literally a bowl of couscous, but it's like blown glass couscous. So the next thing we're going to talk about is endocannibalism,
which
is the funnest. So an ancient ritual of... This is like an ancient ritual of eating a family
member. So we're actually going to eat Uncle Jimmy.
Yeah, or a friend that has passed away. It is done as a ritual and not for survival. In some cases, this is seen as an act of respect because it is believed that by consuming the flesh of this person, you are gaining their knowledge and wisdom.
And where is this practice?
I always mess up how to like say this. Papua New Guinea.
Oh, okay.
The Four tribe, they passed down the cannibalistic funeral rite over many generations. They place a heavy focus on women and children consuming the flesh of four males. Like F-O-R-E, not F-O-U-R.
Yeah, I understand.
Those who consumed had to follow certain protocol. For example, a woman had to eat her brother's brain or the hands of her brother-in-law. So, like, they specifically have to eat certain parts of the body. And they're not allowed to consume other parts.
So, part of this funeral ceremony is a barbecue. All right, let's line up.
I don't know if they cooked them before.
You get the hands. What's your relation? Yeah, all right, you're the pinky toe.
Okay. So.
Do you want ketchup? Yes, please.
The consumption of each body part symbolizes a different attribute the consumer could take on. So in India, for example, certain tribes were known to consume human flesh in an attempt to gain supernatural powers and immortality. Some Native American tribes, while they didn't consume flesh, ingested small bones and ashes from loved ones as a way to mourn their loss.
Yeah, for about 3 days. Then it goes out back in the pile.
Gross. Stop it. It's disgusting. What? Stop. You're the worst.
You don't digest bone.
Okay. I'm so sorry.
It's true. It's like corn. It's a dietary bookmark.
So the Wari tribe from the Amazon practiced endocannibalism as a way to transform their ancestors' bodies into spirits. So the spirit from like this, from them eating the body, the spirit could become an animal that would provide food for generations to come. So a lot of people who studied the Wari tribe believe like this is just the whole point of this is just a way for them to process their grief.
Mm.
Which is what most rituals are.
That's most of them are anyway. Yeah. It's about
processing grief.
Yeah.
By consuming the flesh of their loved ones, they think that they change their surroundings and rid themselves of painful memories. The act of cannibalism isn't like aggressive like you would think it would be. It's
I don't think more... they're a bunch of piranha. I understand.
Yeah, but I think that when you hear the word cannibalism, people think that it's an aggressive word, right? And people think that it's obviously repulsive and, you know, like something that you just shouldn't do. But for other people, it's just a way for them to process their grief, and it's a way for them to mourn. And they have beliefs tied into these things that make sense to them.
When I hear the word cannibalism, I unfortunately think of a movie.
Oh, geez, please don't share this.
Oh, yeah.
Don't share whatever you're about
to
share.
And the barber makes everybody into hamburger.
Oh, Sweeney Todd.
Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, that's true. That's a little bit of cannibalism, but it's like...
That's a whole lot. That's just like unknown cannibalism.
Yeah, they don't even know that they're... But hey, it was better than whatever they were eating before, so who cares?
Whole new meaning to a sloppy Joe, sloppy Bill.
Okay, I'm making a very gross face right now. In Madagascar, they have this ritual called Famadahana, which is... The turning of the bones.
Say that again.
Famadahana.
That sounds fun to say. Famadahana. Famadahana.
I hope I'm pronouncing that right. That's how it looks. That's like what it looks like.
Famadahana.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Okay.
What is Famadahana?
The turning of the bones.
Famadahana.
So
I think I'm gonna name something. Let's name one of the kittens Famadahana.
I will not be doing that. That's not a thing that I'm going to do. It's like not a thing that's happening.
Here, Famadahana. Kitty, kitty, kitty.
That is kind of fun. But really you have fun. To stop it. We're going to like really piss someone off.
Well, you know.
I feel like when you're talking about other people's religions and rituals, you have to be like kind of careful.
For me, Famadahana is just like saying Hakuna Matata.
It means no worries.
It means no worries.
No, it means turning of the bone. There is worries. There's responsibilities. So families exhume their relatives' bodies every 5 to 7 years. Deceased relatives are removed from their graves and redressed in fresh silk shrouds. The festivities start and guests drink, converse, and dance with the deceased. So just before the sun sets, the bodies are returned to the tombs and turned upside down and closed for another 5 to 7 years. So this is done because the people believe that the deceased can intervene in events on Earth. They believe that the dead remain in the land of the living until their bodies fully decompose. They also believe that there's an in-between where if your body has not been exhumed yet at all, you are not part of the living or a part of the ancestors.
Huh.
So until that first time, so you could, for like 7 years, you could just like be in this in-between stage, right? So during Vimadhana, sadness is not allowed. It is seen as a moment of happiness and joy.
I said Hakuna Matata. Exactly.
That doesn't mean no worries. Like, oh, they have to worry about like taking off their ancestors' clothes and putting new clothes on. But there's no
sadness, and worry is sadness. It's Hakuna Matata.
Michael's very confused about what emotions are, and he like connects like several emotions as one emotion, because Michael only has two emotions.
Happy and less happy.
And so he doesn't really have any emotional knowledge. Except for angry and happy.
What was that? Famada Mahana? How do you say it?
Famadahana.
Famadahana.
But that might not be the proper way to say it.
Check our show notes. I may write a song.
No, he's not going to write a song.
I'll sing it.
He won't. That's fine. So the process of Famadahana begins when an ancestral spirit visits a senior family member. The ancestor shows themselves and tells the elder that they are cold and need new clothes. So the ritual ends before night comes because the Marana tribe fear the evil and negative powers that nightfall brings. So the first time the deceased is removed from the tomb, it should be led feet first. But once the Famadahana is complete, the bone should be returned head first because the bones are considered to be living in a new world as ancestors.
Cool.
So
that's actually a cool one.
I thought the other ones were cool too.
Yeah, they're cool. This one just is more fun.
No, you just like saying Famadahana.
I do like Famadahana.
So now we're going to go to Ghana. They have fantasy coffins in Ghana.
There's no Famadahana in Ghana. It would fit so well. I'm just asking.
Oh, oh my gosh. I'll be doing so much editing tomorrow.
Oh, there's no need to edit that.
Okay. So there are a group of artists in Ghana that make fantasy coffins. So they make caskets for families who believe that the deceased will continue their profession in the afterlife. So if you were like a fisherman during your real life, then they would make you a fantasy coffin of like a fish.
Cool.
Because that's going to remind you of what you did in your first life.
I think
and
that's a very
then you'll remember
idea.
That's what you're supposed to be doing.
There's quite a few professions right now could make some really fun coffins. Listen to our unedited version to find out which ones I talk about.
We're not going
to
have an unedited version, to sort of especially not for Michael to talk about anything.
I want to talk about those professional fun coffins.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways.
So what did you do for a living? Nope, you just get a box. We can't do that.
So they're buried in coffins that obviously let them know what they did in life and where they came from. On average, for international clients, it's anywhere between 5,000 and 15,000 per coffin. If it's local, it can be as low as $1,000.
Oh, that's cool.
If you don't get to decide, sorry, not if. You don't get to decide for yourself. Your family chooses for you.
Well, yeah, you're dead.
Yeah, but I know that like some people choose how their funeral is going to be before they die because they pay for it before they die.
Oh,
and
sure.
They like take care of all the stuff before they die.
Order
and
a fantasy coffin.
No, you're not. You can't. You're not allowed. You can't decide for yourself.
Oh.
I get to choose it for you. Uh-huh. Never mind.
Uh-huh. Get ahead with it. Get ahead with your bad self.
Never mind.
Chicken.
I'm not a chicken, but I just shouldn't say that.
What you scared of?
Oh, there's so many things.
Oh, I know. So many fun coffins.
Oh my gosh. So coffins can be
see
made.
See our show notes for the coffins she wants me to be buried in.
I'm not.
Coming sooner than later.
It's so bad. Just a toilet.
Nice. I want that.
Michael's profession is pooping.
It is. I'm a professional pooper. Hey, when I sit in there, it's all Famadahana.
The turning of the dead.
The turning of the turd.
You shouldn't have said that. That's a thing that should not have been said.
It was said.
Now I'm going to have to edit that out. That's so offensive. Stop it.
For all of our listeners, please listen to our unedited versions for the real humor.
There's no unedited version of this one.
How rude.
I don't want to offend anybody.
Nobody's offended. Because they know it's just jest. I just said I'm a professional pooper and you're going to make me a toilet casket.
That's funny.
It's actually great.
So coffins can be made in lots of different forms, hopefully toilets. Some more interesting ones I saw were a shoe. So people that make shoes and stuff.
Or old Mother Hubbard.
Thank you. A Coke bottle and even a camera. This is probably one of my favorites. They have Tibetan sky burials. And I think you know a little bit.
You were telling me a little bit about that, yeah.
A sky burial is basically disposing of a corpse in a place where vultures will come and devour it. So this represents the wishes to go to heaven. So when a Tibetan dies, the corpse is dressed in white Tibetan cloth and placed in the corner of the house for 3 to 5 days. During this time, monks come and recite scripture aloud so that the souls can be released from purgatory. The family members stop doing other everyday stuff in order to create a peaceful environment to allow ascension of the soul to heaven. Later on, the family will choose a lucky day and ask a body, hopefully it's soon, because it's already been there for 5 days.
I hope it's not summer.
I'm just saying. We'll choose a lucky day and ask a body carrier to take the body to the celestial burial platform. The day before the burial, the family takes the clothes off of the body and puts it into the fetal position. Honestly, after they described it, I don't think that it's really, I guess it's kind of a fetal position. So it's a position where they're sitting on their legs. They're on their knees, uh-huh. And they're bent forward. So does that make sense? No.
Yeah.
They're sitting on their feet.
Yeah.
With their legs bent underneath of them. And their head is resting on their knees.
Oh, on their knees. Okay.
At dawn on the lucky day, the body is sent to the burial site in the mountains, and then Esus smoke is burned to attract condors, and then sutras are chanted to redeem the sins of the soul. So the Tibetans believe that if the vultures come and eat the body, that it means the person has no sins and that they have gone successfully to heaven.
Ooh, bad news if it's a no-fly day for the vultures.
Yeah. Well, so these birds are supposed to be very sacred birds. They're holy birds. And so they really believe that if they've done their job correctly, then it takes away all the sins of this person. Mm. And the birds will consume it. And any remains left by the birds have to be gathered and chanted over to ensure the person's soul does not get stuck, because the remains tie the spirit to the life.
So what do they do with the remains then?
Maybe put them back on the mountain. I don't know. Strangers are not allowed to attend these ceremonies. It brings negativity to the ascending souls. And family members are also not allowed to be present at the burial site.
Oh, so only the monks?
Yeah. Yep. So this is a short one. I have a couple short ones just because I couldn't really find a lot on them at all. So there's I think it's Cavitania. They have tree burials. When a Cavite person is sick or nearing death, they go out to the forest and pick a tree. Their family will then build a hut by the tree and the person will live there until they die.
Okay.
They're not left alone, but their family and friends come to hollow out the tree. So when the person dies, they're entombed vertically into the tree trunk. The symbolism here is that just as the trees give life to the tribe through fruit and wood for fire,
life to the tree.
Yeah. Yeah, the person gives that life back to the tree in their death.
That's pretty cool.
In the Philippines, in a tribe in the Philippines, the Apayao people of the Philippines are buried under the kitchen of the house.
Oh.
Yeah, so when someone dies, the body's wrapped up in a mat and carried by immediate male family members, and it's placed inside of a coffin, and they give the dead person a spear and a shield, and then the coffin is lowered into the kitchen floor.
And then they cover the floor back up.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe you aren't personally interested in any of these options. which is okay because there are alternatives, which we will talk about after this break. Okay, so if you don't want a traditional burial, there are quite a few other options. And if you don't like want one of the above aforementioned options, then these ones might be a little bit more modern. And
what if you don't want any of them?
What do you mean? What are you going to do then?
I don't know.
You have this like scary look in your eyes.
What if you don't want any of them?
You have a really messed up brain, so.
I do.
I want to be buried in the walls.
Oh, I do. Put me in the kitchen floor with a shield.
Sick. A spear. Well, that is an option. So.
Yeah, but they're in a box. I don't want to be in a box.
Ew. You just want to literally cause people problems in life and in death.
Yes.
I want to be the reason for your torture for the rest of forever.
That's because I love you.
Yeah. So, if you don't want a traditional burial, you can donate your body to science. That might be a good option
well,
for you.
Well, you already know the deal with the Smithsonian.
Michael claims that his brain is so giant that he has a deal with the Smithsonian that they can have it when he's done with it. I think he's been done with it for a long time.
They've already paid me the $60. I've already spent it. They get it when I'm done.
That's not a donation.
I know, they bought it.
You sold it.
Yeah. I needed the $60.
For what? What'd you spend it on?
Can't tell you.
We're married.
It's in my brain.
We're married.
Yeah, it was before we were married.
Yeah, but you should.
It was for drugs.
Very Wolf of Wall Street of you.
Yes.
Large and in charge.
$60 is $60.
Especially when you have a meth problem.
Yes.
I would just like to say that Michael most likely has never had a meth problem. I don't know. It was before we met.
My teeth are okay, so I think I'm okay.
So, your body could legit be the reason they find a cure for death.
Oh, yeah.
Probably not, though.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess maybe that's a possibility.
I actually would not. I would not be opposed. I'm definitely an organ donor. So my driver's license says organ donor. So if I get in a wreck and there's things they can harvest and use, have at it. And I've said before that I want cremated.
Well, the meth probably ruined most of it.
Well, it's not up to me. They could figure that out. They got to give my head to the Smithsonian, $60. But I would have no problem as being an organ donor or cremation or even body to science, whatever.
Well, when your body is donated to science, they normally end up cremating it anyways.
Right.
So human cadavers are also used in medical schools to teach students about anatomy and proper surgical techniques. Some bodies are even used to do research on Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. Bodies are used to test the safety of vehicles as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Which I feel like you shouldn't do that because an alive body is going to react a lot differently than a
dead body.
Well,
you can't test the vehicles with alive bodies. They used to crash dummies, but
you know, what if you're like terminally ill? Could you donate your body then? Then
they could use alive at that point.
Yeah, but like, what if you're terminally ill and you know you're dying and you like just want to do something for the greater good?
So suicide by automaker?
Well, assisted suicide is totally a thing now. So.
Assisted suicide.
I mean, it's been a thing for a long time, but
I don't think there's any companies out there that's going to do that.
Yeah. Not legally, anyways.
Ford, we test you right before you die.
This is not a legit plug.
Hakuna Matata.
So, if you've ever watched any show that has anything to do with forensics, dead bodies that have been donated are also used to help them study the decomposition rate in specific environments. I was
telling you about the body farm. There's a body farm within 50 miles of us right here.
Yeah, like he's talking to me about visiting a body farm and I'm like, nope, that's how you get ghosts. Nope. That place is haunted AF. For sure. The pros of body donation are the elimination of the financial cost of burial. And in most cases, when they're done with their body, they do cremate it and then return it to the family.
Right.
Good times. So another fun thing you can do is mushroom suits. Sounds like a fun time, but mushrooms are very, are a biodegradable material. And so the suits are just made out of biodegradable materials such as mushrooms. Luke Perry was actually laid to rest in what they call an infinity burial suit. So these materials aid in decomposition and they neutralize toxins. So this releases nutrients into the environment and promotes new growth. The current cost for one of these suits is $1,500.
Ah.
Which isn't that much, actually.
Right.
Actually, I think cremation costs a little bit more than that. Mm-hmm. So maybe you want to be cremated, but you also like want to give back to the environment. You can be buried inside of a tree urn.
Yeah, we were talking about that.
Well, there's several different ways to do this. So they also have these things called burial pods, which are similar to tree urns. So tree urns, basically it's being cremated and then turned into a potted plant. So they add the ashes, soil, and seeds, or even a living tree into a biodegradable urn. And then you just dig a hole and plant the urn right in the ground. And you can buy these kits online.
Okay.
So a burial pod. So it's basically a large sack and you can either place cremated remains inside of it or like an actual whole body into the sack. And you bury it and then a tree is planted on top of it and the tree feeds off of the organic fertilizer. Mm-hmm. Another fun thing, alkaline hydrolysis. We talked about this a little bit, mm-hmm. which is basically like the exact opposite of cremation. It's also known as aqua cremation or resimation. It's a water-based dissolution process that uses heat, pressure, and alkali chemicals to gently break down your body into chemical compounds. Once the process is complete, bone fragments are cremated and the ashes are returned to the family.
What do they do with the fluid?
Nothing. They just separate the bone fragments and stuff from the fluids, I'm assuming. So then the ashes are returned to the family. This process uses less fuel and energy. This practice is actually only available in a few states right now, but is apparently catching on. A sea burial, which we were talking about. I'm not going to go into the reason for sea burials, but a regular everyday person can have a sea burial. And this, so the most efficient form, in my opinion, is cremation and then just, you know, spreading ashes over the ocean and whatever. And actually, I had some interesting information about that. Let me see if I can find it. Hold on a second. It's in my notes somewhere. Hold on. So some famous people that like have had their ashes strewn upon like the ocean waves and stuff are Alfred Hitchcock, Janis Joplin, Robin Williams, and John Lowry. And there's like some rules that have to be followed before you can do this. So firstly, the body cannot be dumped like less than 3 miles out from the land. So yes, the
uncremated body.
Yeah, right. So you can like legit just throw bodies out to sea, which can lead to obvious downsides, which would be like a body washing up on shore,
a little confusion.
And there is talk, as I've read, there's talk about them actually making a law that states that people have to have DNA tests done and it has to be plugged into a database to show that these people were thrown out to sea for a sea burial. So you actually have to use a special coffin to have sea burial. So the MMO specifies the coffin must be made from solid, soft wood and must not contain any plastic, lead, copper, or zinc. This is to make sure it biodegrades and to protect the area from contamination. To make sure the coffin sinks quickly to the seabed and does not float around, 2-inch holes must be drilled throughout, and about 200 kilograms should be clamped to the base.
200 kilograms in addition to the body.
Yes. Correctamundo. And somebody actually, so a journalist who died in 2005 had his ashes shot out of a cannon because he liked explosions.
That's kind of cool.
So that's fun and out of the box. Get it? Out of the box.
I get it. Out of the box.
It was good. You can also have your body turned into an eternal reef. So you can be turned into an artificial reef and be placed at the bottom of the ocean so fish can live inside of you.
That's kind of cool.
So your body still gets cremated, but it could be helping build collapsed ocean neighborhoods.
I'd have like clownfish living in me.
They live in anemone.
Hakuna Matata.
You can have your ashes compressed into a gem.
Oh.
And it can be turned into jewelry. And it looks like cubic zirconia, I think. They actually, cubic zirconia is made just by crushing a bunch of minerals together. And, I mean, that's the same thing. Mummification is an option. You can be mummified or have your pets mummified for $65,000.
Pass.
So there's that. They can also 3D print with your ashes. So you can legit have your ashes turned into, like, anything that you could possibly think of, probably.
Hmm.
That too. Cryonics, which honestly is very unreasonable in my opinion, because
it's been around a long time though.
Yeah, but there's proof showing that the chemicals used for cryonics is toxic.
Yeah.
So you can have your body frozen so they can reanimate it, and it only costs $80,000 to $200,000.
Walt Disney had that done. I thought Walt is in cryogenic.
If you want, they can just
his head,
do that I think to your head.
Yeah.
Why?
Because then
what's he going to do with just his head?
He's going to transplant that onto a body.
Someday.
Yeah, when they thaw him out.
You could have your ashes turned into a vinyl record that plays your favorite song. No. Is it going to be like a Chumbawamba?
Yeah.
Tub thumping?
Tub thumping.
Kiss in the night.
That'd be perfect. I get knocked down, but I get up again.
We hope not.
Be a perfect funeral record.
Wrong. So this is actually really cool. And when I read this, like, this is probably what I want done to myself. So they can make pencils out of your ashes. And somebody has, like, they've created this box. It's a container. And on average, they can make 240 pencils out of a human being. And the sharpener for the pencils is on the side of the box. And once all of the pencils have been used up, the box is now an urn filled with the pencil-shaven ashes of your loved ones.
That's actually kind of cool.
And I think that that's morbid, obviously, but it's actually really cool.
You could have your pencil box beside my record.
Nah.
Actually, I think you should do that thing that we talked about before.
What?
Right at the very end of the funeral, close the lid on the casket, and play Pop Goes the Weasel. And wait for everybody to think,
yeah.
What's going to happen?
Well, you know what they said. You know what the song says.
The monkey chased the weasel.
I get knocked down. Oh.
Yeah. Right.
Sick. I just brought you all here to see how many people actually care about me. Rude. So this is actually, I was talking to Sydney about this earlier, and it's actually really funny. You can also now have your loved one's remains placed inside of a glass vibrator urn. Pleasure in life and in death.
Nice. Okay. Heck no. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yep.
That would be so uncomfortable.
You can call,
right?
You can call
hey,
it.
Hey, can we see Dad's ashes? Nope. No, you cannot.
Well, you can separate it. You can have one set in beads.
How do I know which part of you is in there?
Well, there's one that's named the Magic Mike.
Ew, stop. Okay, we're sorry. Never mind, just stop. The girls listen to this. Sick.
Oh. You brought it up.
That's true. But we're not talking about it anymore.
Hakuna Matata.
You have listeners that you fathered.
This is true.
This is wrong now. Okay. So I have some fun facts that I'm going to share with you.
I found a lot of these as already fun facts.
Yeah, so. They are fun facts. But these are like little fun facts.
What was the thing? Not Hakuna Matata. What was that thing called?
I don't remember.
Oh.
I can't remember now. I'd have to go back and read it because it's like some obscure word. Shoot, now I have to do it. Hold on. Let me see if I can find it.
I can't believe I forgot it already.
Famidihana.
Famadahana.
Yeah, it's Famadahana. I just misspelled it right there.
Famadahana.
Famadahana.
It means no worries.
Okay, so here's our little fun facts. The most expensive funeral ever was the funeral of Alexander the Great, which cost $600 million.
In today's money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He passed. That's actually more, once again, that's more than any other funeral in modern day, even. Michael Jackson's funeral was only $1.2 million.
Wow.
Ronald Reagan's was, I think, $400 or $300 million.
$300 million?
Yeah. Princess Diana's funeral wasn't even that expensive.
You mean $30
million? No, $300 million.
$300 million for Ronald Reagan?
Yeah. Seriously. I'm so serious.
That sounds crazy high.
Okay. The most expensive... Oh, I already said that. Dang it. Stop talking to me.
How much was Alexander the Great's?
$600 million.
That's insane.
He passed in 323 BC and was placed in a gold casket and was transported in a gold carriage pulled by 60 horses.
Jeez.
During the Middle Iron Age, speared corpse burials were a big deal in East Yorkshire. Spears were thrown or placed into graves of some young men. In some cases, they appear to have been thrown so hard that they pierced the body. It's not exactly clear why this was done, but it's possible that it was a military send-off. Rosemary was often tossed into graves instead of roses because rosemary symbolized eternal life. It also helped conceal odors.
Oh, yeah.
People believed that by touching a murderer that had been executed in early modern times, they would be cured of all kinds of illnesses.
Oh, really?
People would attend the executions in hopes of receiving the death stroke of an executed prisoner.
That's weird.
Prior to the 20th century, some European families would hire professional mourners to either look sad or full-on wail at funerals.
Just so the person seemed more liked.
Yeah, just so that, you know, they could really set the environment of the funeral. Elephants and chimpanzees have both been known to bury their dead by throwing leaves and branches over the deceased.
Yeah, that's what I said. Even animals recognize that loss.
The tradition of playing loud music at an Irish wake originated with the belief that it would ward off evil spirits. The wake also presented an opportunity to watch over the dead to see if they would awaken. So it is perfectly legal in most U.S. states to conduct a home funeral.
Oh, okay.
In 1829, a coffin was created that allowed the deceased to ring a bell to alert the graveyard worker just in case they were buried alive.
Saved by the bell.
Yep. There's a cemetery in Texas named the Baby Head Cemetery.
Okay.
I don't know if there's baby heads there. Oh. Sorry. Maybe. In Taiwan, respect for the recently deceased sometimes includes exotic dancers or strippers.
Yes. For the Taiwanese, not for me, baby. Those guys, crazy. So, back to my coffin.
Which is probably going to come sooner rather than later. So, I actually have a blog post that I want to read by Aaron Freeman. And it's about why a physicist should speak at your funeral.
Oh. Cool. I'm very interested in it.
Hold on. Let me find it really fast. So here it is. You want a physicist to speak at your funeral. You want the physicist to talk to your grieving family about the conservation of energy so they will understand that your energy has not died. You want the physicist to remind your sobbing mother about the first law of thermodynamics, that no energy gets created in the universe and none is destroyed. You want your mother to know that all your energy, every vibration, every BTU of heat, every wave of every particle that was her beloved child, remains with her in this world. You want the physicist to tell your weeping father that amid energies of the cosmos, you gave as good as you got. And at one point, you'd hope the physicist would step down from the pulpit and walk to your brokenhearted spouse there in the pew and tell him that all the photons that ever bounced off your face, all the particles whose paths were interrupted by your smile, by the touch of your hair, hundreds of trillions of particles have raced off like children, their ways forever changed by you. And as your widow rocks in the arms of a loving family, may the physicist let her know that all the protons that bounced from you were gathered in the particle detectors that are her eyes, that those photons created within her constellations of electromagnetically charged neurons whose energy will go on forever. You can hope that your family will examine the evidence and satisfy themselves that the science is sound and that they'll be comforted to know your energy is still around. According to the law of conservation of energy, not a bit of you is gone. You are just less orderly.
Correct.
So I really liked that. And then we're going to send this off with a poem. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Miss me, but let me go. When I come to the end of the day and the sun has set for me, I want no rights in a gloom-filled room. Why cry for a soul set free? Miss me a little, but not too long, and not with your head bowed low. Remember the love we once shared. Miss me, but let me go. For this is a journey we all must take, and each must go alone. It's all part of the master's plan, a step on the road to home. When you are lonely and sick at heart, go to the friends we know, and bury your sorrows in doing good deeds. Miss me, but let me go.
That's actually a really good poem. That's a good one.
So, that's all we have.
Yeah, it's been good to be back.
And at some point, we might touch on these different things specifically in bonus episodes, which will only be available to patrons, probably, on the Patreon. The
first-level patron.
Maybe.
The seventh-level patron gets assistance in a coffin choosing.
That's not true.
Okay.
That's false advertising. Please stop talking. This is not legally binding. Michael just said stuff. He actually doesn't even know what's going on.
I don't.
But this episode actually will be available ad-free for level one patrons.
Will it be available unedited?
Maybe someday. I might compile bloopers and put them in that are funny, not like stupid, you know, long pauses and stuff. But maybe.
So to our several hundred thousand listeners, thank you. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. Nice to be back. And I think what you were mentioning to me before is we're going to start doing 8 episodes a week or something.
That is very not true.
That's not true also. I get mine.
I think we're going to stick to our Wednesdays at 9 p.m. And that's where we're at.
Nice.
So I'm sure that everybody listening will figure out what next week's is about in a couple of days. And we'll go from there. And hopefully we're more consistent and stuff stops happening to us.
Yeah, this was fun. I enjoyed it. At least it wasn't like a downer episode. This was kind of light and fun. I mean, you gotta have
fun. I think
we're
going to have a murder next week.
Oh, goodness.
Now that's your favorite.
Well, that leads to a coffin. Whoop, the puppies are barking.
Yep.
We have those too.
Sorry. Okay.